Norm?
Yeah, thanks. Norm Rubin for EnergyPro. Thank you for a very interesting presentation. I have three quick questions, I hope, and I'm wondering if I can get them all done. Have you ever seen any what we're calling incentive rate management applied to government-owned reactors or stations or generating stations?
I have to think about that because there might be one. I'm thinking maybe the New York Power Authority, Indian Point 2 and 3. I'm not sure, but there might have been some discussion about it. But I think ultimately it never happened. So I think the answer probably is no. Subject to check.
Thank you. I'm confused. I can understand why Darlington and Pickering together might not make a 10-reactor fleet, but doesn't Darlington make a 4-reactor fleet and Pickering D make a 4-reactor fleet? And isn't that a healthy number compared to some of the operators in the state, some of the smaller ones?
Fleet versus non-fleet. Yeah, I think the Darlington might apply. I don't know. I've not done the analysis.
Pickering B has 4 near identical reactors built in consecutive years. That would be a fleet in your books.
It's possible. I don't know without doing the analysis.
Because their designs might be internally different. Is that what you're saying?
Might be. It depends on the vintage. I've seen situations. For example, if you look at San Onofre 2 and 3, they're CE80 units, and then you look at Palo Verde CE80 units. Design basis is different. Can't compare them. And, you know, I've looked at them very carefully because those are two of my clients. So I'd have to, you really have to drill into the data.
Okay. And the last of the three quickies is you've mentioned this nonlinear degradation, basically, toward the end of life. Has this analysis, this kind of benchmarking or these kinds of incentives ever helped inform, or can you imagine it helping to inform, the decision to finally throw in the towel, to say that the day has come to decommission?
I've got to ask you a clarifying question on that. Are you saying, have nuclear performance standards come to that conclusion? Or because the way it's done is you basically sit there in year 30, say a 40-year life, 40-year license. You sit there in year 30, and you look. You do a two-go analysis. You say, okay, I'm sitting in year 30. I've got these costs. This is my cost projections. This is my capacity factor projections. You look at available alternatives, and so you do the comparative remaining life cycle economic analysis of that unit versus alternatives, and that based upon that. I think some units in the U.S. have made the decision to shut down early, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions from the floor? Yes?
From the Society of Energy Professionals. I just had a question. I wonder if you're aware of any U.S. benchmarking that includes less obvious costs, such as dealing with the nuclear fuel waste. Just a bit of background, there was an article in the PO Dimensions magazine, the engineering magazine, that, you know, spoke of the CANDU plans to improve and optimize fuel waste fuel cycles. In summary, to squeeze more out of the nuclear fuel, a lower cost with dealing with the waste. So, I'm just wondering if these are ever counted in the U.S. benchmarking studies, and if you're aware of any studies that might look at this issue.
I've not looked at that issue, and I'm not aware of any studies that have looked at it.
So basically, the benchmarking in the U.S. does not take into account dealing with the fuel waste?
My benchmarking experience, I've only really dealt with capacity factor, O&M costs, capital additions costs, staffing, things of that nature, security. We look at those kinds of elements, not nuclear fuel storage or nuclear fuel of any type. That's an input that we do not evaluate.
Okay, thanks. Operator, can you see if there are any online questions?
Thank you. Please press star 1 for any questions or comments. No questions registered at this time, sir.
Okay. The questions from the floor? Okay. I think we called it concluded with George's presentation and discussion. I have a break scheduled for 3 o'clock, but I get the feeling that maybe we could just press on, and we have one more presentation from OPG and Pankaj and Randy. Anybody feel a need for having a break or environmental break or anything? Okay, we'll proceed with the next presentation by Pankaj and Randy.
Thank you, Rusty. Well, we've had some good presentations today, and I'm pleased to present you with OPG's views on this very important topic. I'm joined today by Randy Pugh, and Randy and others in our department have spent many hours pondering this whole issue. And he'll be speaking to you more on power advisory framework and also on comments that OPG has made into the OEB's RRFE process. And then I'll recap OPG's concerns with the proposed framework, as well as present you with some ideas for what we intend to do with the future filing. So with that, let me turn it over to Randy. Thanks, Randy.
Well, when the Ontario Energy Board asked us to consider incentive regulation, we were certainly happy to do that. You've heard some views from two sets of consultants now that have given us a pretty good field or a number of options to consider. They seem to have come down with a similar recommendation, certainly with respect to nuclear, and I think their recommendations on hydro are just shades different. When we're thinking about incentive regulation, we sort of start from where we are right now. And I know it's been labeled as cost of service regulation, but certainly we feel that there is a lot of significant incentives involved in our cost of service regulation. First of all, we've got the HIM, Hydroelectric Incentive Mechanism. There was incentives in our last rate case with respect to heavy water sales. There are structural incentives that were built into our rates. I believe Julia mentioned the two-year test year. It's a multi-year cost of service, although it's a pretty small multi-year, but it still provides some incentive regulation attributes in that the longer the term upon which you set rates, you have an incentive to make efficiency improvements in the first year and reap the benefits, certainly in the second. The volumetric incentive. We are probably the utility, I don't know of anyone who has a 100% variable rate. Any type of variable component to your rate provides an incentive, and 100% variable is the maximum incentive you have, which is certainly a very important and perhaps the most important driver if your goal is to maximize output from your nuclear facilities. That provides a very strong incentive to keep your generation facilities down as little as possible and to conduct your outages as efficiently as possible so that you can get back up running and getting to make money. So from an economic perspective, that is a huge incentive. With respect to cost of service generally, I believe Power Advisor had mentioned that on, I think it was page 39 of their report. To the extent you have a cost of service regulation, you review the costs. To the extent you disengage the review of prices and costs, you tend not to review the costs, unless there's a specific module such as a Darlington refurb, a major capital addition, and in that case you would, because it's more of a flow-through type proposition. So there are a lot of structural incentives also in our rates, and in our last rate case for nuclear, we adopted a top-down planning approach in response to some of the benchmarking results that we received from Scott Madden. And in that top-down approach, we looked forward, we looked at where our benchmarking results are, we determined what was doable, and we set targets for doing those sort of things, for efficiency improvements, and those were ultimately built into rates. So that is certainly not too far away from it, I think as Jay and perhaps Julie has pointed out, from the multi-year cost of service approach, but you are in fact building in incentives and performance into your rates. So whatever you call it, there's sure a lot of incentives in our current cost of service regulation. So I think that's sort of our starting point. That's our general view on incentive regulation. And our some general views were also provided with the renewed regulatory framework. We actually did make a submission on April 20th. Please feel free in your written comments to refer to it. I'm going to highlight some of the details here. To the extent any additional incentives are required to support performance objectives, and I don't know if those are N4 or they're built into N2, and I don't care. But whatever they are, they should be meaningful. They should drive appropriate behaviors. They should be understandable. They should be measurable, and they should be attainable with a reasonable degree of diligence and effort. OPG believes, and this was also mentioned in the RFE, some utilities don't have balanced scorecards. We do. And our scorecard, we think, provides the right measures for operating a generation utility. And they are performance with respect to financial metrics, fleet operations, project management, and a combined dimension of safety, environmental, and reliability. Those are all dimensions of performance that we think are value added. And those performance metrics are built into the pay for performance plan for our senior managers. Power Advisory had mentioned that if you have performance objectives that differ from how your management is operating, sometimes get conflicts. The ones in our scorecard are aligned with our pay for performance plans. We believe the balanced scorecard reflects current operating circumstances facing each utility, and therefore they're more meaningful standards for setting utility-specific performance and assessing the performance of that utility. I'm not exactly sure how to factor those in. I don't know if it's an N4 model, frankly, or how you will go about doing it, but it occurs to us that you can factor in those performance standards in either the actual rates or as part of the earnings sharing mechanism. If you have earned a fair bit and or you're over-earning and you didn't achieve some of your performance targets, maybe your share, or maybe you give back a bigger share. Maybe the opposite applies if you're under-earning and you've done well in other performance metrics like safety that aren't formally built in. Perhaps you get to keep more. So those are details we'll work out later. And as Julian said, it's more of a holistic view on how you go about doing it. But if you're incorporating those, we think those are things that need to be incorporated. We talked about benchmarking. I think we received some cautions about doing it from George and others. These performance standards, where you look at the benchmarks, we're making some strides to move towards them. We think they're realistic and aggressive strides towards doing that. But again, the devil's in the details, and how you progress towards those requires a lot of discussion and analysis. And I think that was sort of the message that George was providing. We endorsed the multi-year capital plan that was suggested in the RRFE. And we think this is a useful mechanism because it provides some greater certainty to both ratepayers and the utility itself. How you go about incorporating those, again, the devil in the details, it provides you with the opportunity for smoothing rates. It can address the incentive to backload capital investments towards the end of an IRM period. And it can improve the ability of the utility to fund capital requirements, depending on how it's designed. So in general, we support it, and we'll work towards refining how it works. Finally, price caps and other forms of incentive regulation can work in a stable business environment since they're grounded in historic trends. I think Power Advisory has mentioned this. Certainly London Economics has mentioned it. I think it's less suited towards periods of significant transition and reinvestment in capital. And Funkish will talk more about this later, but we certainly feel that that's where we are with respect to our nuclear operations. Now, specifically with respect to the Power Advisory Report, we looked at it, and we certainly reviewed the conclusions of London Economics after they had reviewed the report, and we support this the Power Advisory Report's conclusions and the comments. provided thereon. Sorry, I flipped to page too soon. Specifically, they say that there's an opportunity, not necessarily to have different mechanisms for hydronuclear, but certainly you can, because they provide a number of different examples of how those businesses are very different. I would actually add one more that I didn't hear in their list, and that is most of the capital at OM&A actually is incurred at the technology-specific level. There are some corporate costs, and there are some centrally held costs that have been reviewed. The cost allocation of those has been reviewed in actually two proceedings, one proceeding, our initial proceeding, and then using the three-prong test on our second proceeding. And the board found no particular concerns with those. So in our view, that provides a reasonable basis for moving ahead on a technology-specific consideration of IRM. Earnings sharing was certainly suggested by Power Advisory, and London Economics has suggested that the it's something worthy of consideration, although it's part of an item when you look at all of the different packages of things you're adding to an incentive mechanism. We certainly are for it at OPG. We think as long as it's symmetric, it's reasonable, and one of our biggest concerns is it hasn't, as Mr. Stevenson points out, it's not a well-known or observed approach, and the chance of getting it wrong is certainly much higher when you haven't seen it and you have no lessons to learn. So the earnings sharing mechanism limits the possibility of making mistakes and the potential for regulatory intervention. Setting base rates using cost of service. One of the comments from Power Advisors, IRM benefits from the establishment of price based on cost of service principles in the initial cast-off point. It will be a number of years before OPG has had its last rate case when we come in. We certainly feel that a review of all those costs is reasonable given the time period that's elapsed. And we also note that it's been done for Audrey Ellie Utility at the Ontario Energy Board that's had its rates set on a cost of service basis. And frankly, we don't feel we're any different. TFP studies may be problematic. You've heard that from both Power Advisory and London Economics. Pankaj will be talking later about data availability and relevance to future operations. We have concerns with those. Evaluating options based on objectives. We think that's the right approach to do. We looked at the objectives set out by Power Advisory and London Economics, and it looks like there's an attempt to kind of mesh the two together. Without commenting on all of the objectives, the one objective that did stick out to us was the one that related to lower electricity bills. And I don't know if you can have an objective that determines lower in an absolute sense, but certainly in a relative sense, any type of efficiency improvements you make would lower costs. And it's relevant to what costs otherwise would have been under cost of service, in our view. Cost efficiencies have already been established for hydro. On page 72 of the Power Advisory Report, they talk about the fact that a lot of the costs associated with hydroelectric are indeed capital. There's not much in terms of OM&A, and therefore incentivizing the company on that metric would be, on that component, would be perhaps not the best use of significant studies and total factor productivity analysis that may in fact be difficult. And they suggested perhaps a modest efficiency improvement. Given concerns with the TFP development, we thought there might be two other options. One of them is one that's used for Enbridge, which is rather than doing a TFP study, you take a percentage of whatever the escalation mechanism is. So it could be 90%, 95%, 85% of GDP IPI.
Even 100%.
Sure. Sold. And the second option, which to not confuse the nomenclature, I'll actually refer to it as the H7 option, which is was proposed for by London Economics, and it certainly we think that's reasonable, and it facilitates a learn-by-doing approach if OPG agrees to defer the implementation of IRM for nuclear. The Power Advisory Report said safety has not been called into question, and we're glad about that, but we think that's a very significant component of the product that we sell. No production, safe, the only production is safe production, and we think that that is part of the product, and just because someone does well on something, it's not doesn't mean it's a metric that shouldn't be measured and a quality of service standard that shouldn't be maintained. Finally, I think I clarified this last point with Power Advisory, so I think I'm through.
Okay. So turning specifically to some of the issues and concerns that we have with the proposed framework, I'm going to cover five things. And the first two, while they're all related, the first two are very interrelated. The first is OPG believes that implementing IRM for the nuclear side should be delayed or deferred until after Pickering is out of service and Darlington refurb is completed, rather than sort of force-fitting an IRM formula to fit such circumstances. And then the second one, as I mentioned, is related, and it's because we are facing very large and lumpy capital requirements in the very near future. And, you know, Randy's talked about it. We have made some submissions on these points in the RRFE proceeding, which contemplates a generic capital module. But really, the capital, the size of the capital dollars that we're talking about here are very significant. The third concern really is the application of benchmark targets, benchmark efficiency targets, again, in a nuclear context. We agree with the recommendation in principle, but really the concern, our concern is how will these benchmarks be applied? You know, will the starting point be OPG's business plan, which is really where we think it should start, or is it intended to be something entirely different? Fourth is data availability. Many of OPG's competitors are unregulated, and so data sharing and data availability becomes a real issue for any kind of benchmarking or study that has to be carried out here. It's certainly a very sensitive topic when you're dealing with other utilities. And then lastly, data relevance. So OPG is in somewhat uncertain times right now. There's a provincial benchmarking review of the company going on. No doubt these changes will lead to different future operating conditions. And so comparing that to the past, in our minds, is going to be problematic. So I mentioned that I'd chat a bit about our path forward, our proposed path forward. What we intend to do today, our current thinking, is that we will file a hydro rebasing application in 2013 for a typical two-year test period. That has been OPG's pattern to file two-year type test periods. And that'll be sometime in the first half of 2013 for rates in 2014 and 2015. We will, of course, conduct any analyses that are required coming out of this consultation process and any guidance that we receive from all stakeholders. And in 2015, OPG would file a hydro IRM application with the objective of establishing IRM rates in 2016. And, of course, in line with what I've mentioned before, Our ask or our belief is that we continue nuclear on cost of service until after Darlington refurbishment is done and Pickering is out of service. And I believe that is the sum of our remarks, and we'll open it up.
Can you explain the last point? So you're not going to file a cost of service for nuclear until after Darlington is completed?
No, I think the thinking today is that given, you know, the provincial review, et cetera, we would like to file, or we intend to file a nuclear cost of service as soon as we can, but, you know, probably in the 2014 timeframe.
So you're going to separate them out?
We're going to separate them out. So we do agree with that general approach that's been postulated by Power Advisory and echoed by London Economics, that separating the two businesses by technology is workable. It's a workable framework. And so this is our intention to carry on with that sort of separation.
So how do you deal with the sort of shared corporate costs? Is it similar to the Hydro One model?
I'm not familiar with the Hydro One model, but I think that's a good question, Julie. I mean, that is going to be one of the key issues, certainly, and we will have to do that in a robust and rigorous and transparent manner. I mean, Randy may have some other comments.
I think if to the extent you have shared costs, if we're going ahead with a hydro application, the hydro application would include a review of the shared costs associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
Our allocation model would be in there, and the costs that are all related to that hydro entity would be reflected in the hydro price. What happens to nuclear at the end of the day, whether those costs get flown to nuclear, I'm not certain how we would go about doing that. We could, that might be something that we have to absorb. It may something be something we request a deferral or variance account for. There could be a number of ways to proceed.
So
but at the end of the day, I think if you're going to set a rate for something, it should reflect the cost of those of that product, and part of those costs are the central costs.
So all I was saying is it sounds a bit like the Hydro One model where you've got transmission and distribution on separate tracks, but there is a pool of shared costs and an allocation process. Okay, thanks.
Okay, before I go to the floor, I'd like to go to the remote line. Operator, can you check to see if there are any questions?
Certainly. Please press star 1 for any questions. There are no questions registered, sir.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go to the floor. Jay?
I just want to follow up on Julie's questions. If I understand correctly, you're going to file an application in 2013 for 2014 and 2015 hydroelectric payment amounts. And for 2013 payment amounts, you're proposing to keep the same ones.
That's correct.
Same level. Aren't your costs going down, though?
No, in fact, you'll see our evidence shortly, but no, costs are not going down.
Because more than 50% of your costs are existing capital costs, and that would be depreciating each year. And the cost of capital has gone down, too.
Well, so are we talking about hydroelectric
nuclear?
Well, keep in mind, we have a significant capital investment coming in next year.
Is that going to be in rate base in 2013?
It'll be, we're proposing to put it into rate base in 2014. It's currently scheduled to go into service sometime in 2013.
But you're actually anticipating that it'll be added to rate base in 2014.
That's right.
Okay, wait a sec, sorry. You're not going to do cost of service next year, so for 2013, so you'll put it in service at the end of the year, and then you'll take full year depreciation in 2014. Is that the plan?
That's the current plan, yes.
Okay. All right. So I understand that. And then with respect to nuclear, you're anticipating you're going to keep the same payment amounts for 2 years, for 2013 and 2014?
Jay, that's the current thinking. I mean, there are moving parts here. So right now, we are proposing a framework that says, okay, we're going to split this by technology. We're proceeding with the hydroelectric payment amounts application, as you mentioned, and on a cost of service basis. Now, as time travels on and unfolds, if our nuclear side, if we look at the nuclear side and say, okay, you know what, this doesn't make any sense to stay out, we will likely put an application together for that too. But right now, we're thinking that we go with hydro first.
And then nuclear, you would file in 2014 for 2015 and 16?
Correct.
And then in 2016, in 2016, you'd apply for 2017, 18, and so on until Darlington's completely refurbished and Pickering's closed.
That's right.
Okay.
Any other questions from the floor? Yes.
Michael. Hi. I'm Michael Bonagrove for VEC. If you could go to page 6 of your presentation, I just wanted to ask a clarification question. Under the bullet point, safety has not been called into question. It talks about OPG's conservative approach, appropriate given the proximity of generation to large populations. Accounts for additional costs that must be considered in the IRM. When you talk about a conservative approach, is that what's that relative to? Is that relative to other nuclear operators, for example?
Well, I guess maybe yes. Well, it's We don't want safety to be a concern. Okay, so when we think about safety, the message from Tom Mitchell is it's job one. So we may have margins associated with that that are so that you don't err anywhere close to the line.
Okay. Because just when I was reading it, it seemed to suggest that relative to other nuclear, relative to the other entities you might be benchmarked against, you have additional costs, and that those are because you're either more conservative, and that if it's because you're more conservative, it's because you're closer to large populations. That's
perhaps,
what I'm reading
perhaps
there.
I think the point is, and you'll notice I didn't read those words, and perhaps they were an unfortunate choice of words, and perhaps they weren't deleted out of this presentation, but as requested. Safety has not been called into question. The idea at the end of the day is we look at our performance on our scorecard reflects a number of major what we consider essential performance requirements for our product, and one of them is safety. And what we were responding to is the Power Advisory Report seemed to be saying, whether it was saying it or not, but seemed to be saying, safety is not a problem. Don't worry about it. Just concentrate on costs. And we didn't think that was the right message to get across. So we're responding to that. And if you can take that from the presentation instead of focusing on the words, I would be grateful.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks.
Any more questions from the floor?
Could you just explain what's happening with the Niagara Tunnel? I need to have my memory jogged.
Well,
what the timelines are for that?
The project is proceeding on track to be completed towards the third quarter or so of next year. It's well along the way. We hope to have it in service late in 2013,
mm-hmm.
if not earlier. But it is.
When is a board review of that project?
Well, I think it'll be part of the 2013 application that we will file next year. You know, the board has already noted that they would like a phased proceeding.
Yeah.
So the hydroelectric operations first and the tunnel.
Oh,
we're proposing to bring all of that in next year, the entire hydroelectric business and the Niagara Tunnel. So the board and you have a full chance to review all the costs and operational efficiencies, et cetera.
Okay.
So just to follow up, that the anticipation is that the process will proceed just like the board contemplated in its last decision, but only on hydroelectric.
Possibly, that's correct.
Okay.
You know, we're looking at it right now. The intention is yes, that's how we'll proceed. We'll bring the entire hydro business in, including the tunnel, and then we'll go from there.
Thanks.
Jay, do you have another question?
I have actually two more questions, but I'll take them one at a time. One of the problems with generation is, particularly the things that you're doing, is that it's highly capital intensive. So you've got $1.6 billion you're going to spend, I think that's right, on the Niagara Tunnel, that's going to come into rate base, bang. If you have a pure cost of service, that results in a tremendous bump in the unit cost of hydro generation, right?
Perhaps. You're also bringing in production.
No, I understand, but that production is a lot more expensive than your existing production. Should be.
Well, Jay, our early analysis shows that even after the Niagara Tunnel, the rate impact is moderate, let's put it that way.
Yeah, okay. Well, then let me turn to Darlington, because that's the other problem. So you've got $3.7 billion of nuclear assets right now, and you're going to add 8, let's say, or whatever, 9 or 10, I don't know, whatever the number is, for roughly the same production. There is a concern that because of that large capital infusion, you're going to have a bump, but then the cost will be essentially level for a long period of time, relatively long period of time. Have you given any thought to whether some form of pricing that is a levelized pricing that balances out that capital intensity is more appropriate than a straight cost of service for those things?
We absolutely have given it some thought. In fact, we are concerned about that, and we will continue to take a look at things like that and come up with proposals that make sense, because you hit the nail on the head. These are large, lumpy investments that are coming in at the same time as production is falling off. compared to, you know, putting a brand new asset such as a tunnel in place where there's a commensurate increase in production. So that is absolutely a concern for us, and we're looking at it.
You don't have anything you can share with us on that?
Not today.
That would obviously affect rate-making models, right?
No question. And, when the time is right, and I'm hoping it's soon. In fact, we both are hoping it's soon. We will share that with you.
There was a comment in the RFE. One of the straw man components was a long-term capital component. And this could fit squarely into that. You could say, okay, this is what it's going to be. This is where it comes in on the 10-year plan. Let's look at managing the rate impact of that. That could involve receiving some depreciation, cost of capital items in advance, such that you don't have as large of a price spike when it comes in. Those dollars could either be set aside to help stabilize the rate, so it's collected in advance and then stabilize it. I think Hydro One had a rate stabilization account in the I don't know, late 1980s or something like that. So maybe something like that works. I'm just throwing that out there. This is a consultative, and we're supposed to be working together towards a productive end, but that's something that might work.
Are you considering that in the private sector, when companies have very highly capital-intensive projects, they basically lose money in the first years because of their higher capital component, if you like, but then over the course of time, they make money and they price their project on the basis that they'll make money over the long haul. Is that one of the things you're considering?
Well, I mean, we're looking at several models, but, again, Jay, I'm not at liberty today to share those details with you, but we will share those details and we'll come up with options.
Okay. Can I ask my other question, or is it somebody else's turn?
Well, go ahead, Jay.
All right, you're basically on 3-year cost of service right now, right? Well, 2-year plus an extension, so it's basically 3 years. And in fact, on nuclear, you're planning to make it 4 years, right?
That seems to be the outcome.
It assuming that these N2H7 type of models are essentially a sort of a stylized form of multi-year cost of service, what sort of time frame do you think you could live with? How long could you make that? So, assuming you're projecting your costs over time, how long could you make that before it starts to be impossible to handle?
I think what Julia did say is that she considers that to be a form of incentive-based regulation. So whatever you want to call it, we'll call it N2.
Okay.
Right now, our...
Or H7, because I know, sure. I know nuclear you want to put off into the distance. But
We have prepared business plans that have a 5-year business plan. Currently, we've sort of scaled back our planning process so that it's the focus of the plan is a more rigorous plan in the first 3 years. I'm assuming, somebody checked, that we have the ability to go back to a 5-year plan and add more rigor to those final years. So that would tend to lead you to a 1-year base here and a 3-year plan with a 1-year bridge, 1-year base, 3-year incentive. So.
Oh, okay. So that would be a 4-year incentive regulation plan.
Well, you have a bridge, right?
Four-year plan, I guess. But yeah. Again, Jay, I mean, I think, you know, the comments have been made by others today. The devil's in the details. We'll, you know, what are the off-ramps? And we'll need to take a look at all of those mechanisms.
Well, what you asked a question about capabilities, and you don't want to be redesigning your entire operation to, you know, support a specific aspect. I'm telling you what we have in our capability of doing at this time.
Thanks.
Okay, I'll ask the operator. Poll the ones online, see if there are any questions.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 for any questions or comments. There are no questions registered, Mr. Schultz.
I think we killed them all. Travis?
So, Travis for the Retail Council of Canada. My apologies if you covered this in your presentation. I was writing as fast as I could. I'd like to hear what you have to say about the concept of an IRM for a capital project like the DRP or something analogous, just maybe on a conceptual level, if not relating to that specific project.
Okay. I'll take a crack at it first, and then Randy might have some comments. let me tell you what I don't want to see. Okay, I don't want to see a capital module akin to the current ICM that's in third generation IRM. But I think there are problems with that, and those problems are coming out now. So that's what I don't want to see. What I do want to see, though, is some things that Jay has already alluded to, that we have to have an accommodation such that there's some, you know, a recognition of the long-term nature of these costs, in that we're not going to spend whatever the dollars are in 1 year. They're going to extend over a very long period of time, and significant operational issues with that kind of spend, complicated by the volume drop-off. So the costs don't go away. In fact, they're exacerbated by that. A capital module that I'd like to see would have to address all of those kinds of things.
And if I could just ask a follow-up, are there ways you can think of that would incentivize, and I'm sure that this is an incredibly difficult thing to do for anyone, but really incentivize accurate planning figures and cost estimations, and also encourage those risks to be passed down to subcontractors. I mean, I'm sure that's something that OPG tries to do anyway, but are there certain economic tools that we could use that would help in that process?
Well, you know, and this may not completely hit your question, but, right now we think our business planning process is pretty rigorous. And, when we start to engage contractors for refurb and what have you, the company is very focused on costs and cost efficiencies, et cetera. I mean, our shareholders certainly share those same concerns. So I think the planning process and the engagement process for vendors, et cetera, will need to build that in, and it has started to build that in. So
I think the other comment I would make is, based on experience I have with contractors of building my home, take this for what it is, to the extent I want them to cover risk, it costs me money. So I think you have to make an intelligent trade-off between the two.
Any other questions from the floor? Julie?
You've had some discussion, I can't remember in your presentation, about earnings sharing. And I just wondered if that was strictly in the context of an IRM, or if you're prepared in the cost of service proceedings to adopt an ESM.
Well, I mean, there is some earnings sharing already built in.
Yeah, no, I realize that. Yeah.
We'll have to bring it up.
Okay. Or someone else might.
I can say that it has not been thought of, or it hasn't been discussed.
Okay. Interesting. And can you just, one more question. Can you indicate, what's the timing on the Darlington?
So right now.
So maybe we'll all be retired by the time you're going to propose IRM.
I think it's in the next 5 to 7 years is when it starts. Within that sort of time frame, if not slightly earlier.
Yeah, I can't remember. I thought there was, and maybe the people from the Power Workers Union, they're jumping up, and one of them is jumping up and down. So maybe she has the answer for us.
2016 to 2024, sound familiar?
Right. That sounds familiar.
It sounds familiar, good.
I knew Judy knew the answer.
What does that mean?
So the units start to come out of service in the 2016 type time frame.
Yeah.
The first units.
Oh, okay. So we all will be retired when you propose IRM for nuclear.
We've also got Jackie.
Maybe Michael Montegaro won't.
Yeah, we'll still get
Sorry?
Can I ask a follow-up on that?
Yes.
There was a date when you were going to have the release estimate for the Darlington project. And that was reasonably soon, I thought. sometime in the next 12 months, maybe. Do you know when that is?
I don't. Jay, I
know. Well, you're asking two guys that are a bit out of their depth and from that perspective.
Yeah, we came here to talk about designing of regulation options, so
that's going to matter. Because the reason I'm raising it is because there's certainly some discussion, and will be some discussion, about whether there are benchmark parameters or IRM sort of parameters around the Darlington project. And if there are, then the time to do that is going to be when you have the budget that you're willing to live with, which is your release budget, which I thought was next year. So it's timely now, is my point.
Why don't you just take information first?
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly endeavor to get back to you on that, Jay, because I don't have that.
Seriously, answer. I'd rather give you the right answer than speculate now.
Okay, so are we going to get like an undertaking number?
I guess it's the first consultative with an undertaking.
I haven't been elevated to board status yet, Jay.
But we will provide you with the information.
How does Violet, that? Would that be J1?
Any other questions? Okay, one last polling of those online. Operator, please ask.
We do have a question from Larry Schwartz. Please go ahead.
Thank you. The question I have is a brief one, but it relates to the comment that I made earlier this morning to the people from London Economics, and you've pretty much said what I think is probably true, that production volumes in the future are declining, or perhaps even in relative terms, whether in absolute terms, just as you have these large multi-year costs coming in. Do you have has OPG published a forecast of its expected production of the market or its own production volumes, or are you relying on another source of data for your understandings of how the future production volume is going to unfold?
Larry, I believe what I was talking about was as units are coming out of service for refurbishment, the production associated from those units would have to drop, would have to come off as well.
Ah, well, thank you for clarifying that. Do you have a forecast or an understanding of the production volumes of the future? You know, roughly speaking, whether demand for electricity is going to be growing wildly, not growing at all, perhaps declining?
I don't have that today, Larry. No.
Okay.
Any other questions from the floor? Okay. I will remind participants here today, if you haven't signed the registry, please do so. Also, I will remind you that there is an opportunity for written submissions and comments on all the material that's been presented, the discussion you heard and participated in, and that's please submit it to the board. I think the instructions were either going to be posted or were posted in the invitation. Best to check that. I will check that myself and see if it needs any clarification. I'm targeting end of September for those comments, please. Yes, Judy.
When you say target, is that a definite drop that date? Or do we...
Stan, we're going to hold you to.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a semi-dead date.
Thank you.
Let's just say I haven't discussed this with my senior management yet, how quickly they want to see a report. This is my own internal, and as the guy who has to write the report, I know what my timing is going to be like. So I think that will probably come out to be a firm date.
So when you talk about your report, that's the report that takes all of our comments.
Yes.
So what's your timeline on that? You mentioned it.
After refurb.
2025.
In the business plan or in our plans, I have fall 2012.
Oh. Thank you.
Yeah. Under the tree.
I didn't say that. Okay. Thank you very much for coming today. I think it was a very useful session.
What happened to the general discussion of all topics?
Oh, well, true. You do bring up a point. We still have the floor here. The door's not closed. Any general discussion?
Not that I want to stay, but...
Any general discussion, yes. I'm sorry I sort of overlooked that. I thought we had exhausted the topics. Anybody want to bring up any questions, ask board staff or...
Randy, it's Richard Stevenson. I'm just curious.
I'm Rusty. He's
sorry,
Randy.
Right, yeah, right. Rusty. I'm sorry.
It's the state of mind, too.
Yeah. Let's see what answer we get from him first. This is just a next steps kind of question. So we're going to do these submissions, and you're going to prepare a report, and the board's going to do something. And I guess the question is, what is the something that we should expect the board to be doing? What is the next iteration of this in terms of when would we get another shot at input, or I just don't know where it's going.
That's a very good question. I will submit my report to the senior management, and whether we take it to the board or a committee of the board for consideration as a potential policy paper to come from the board, I can't say where that's going to go. We will be waiting application from OPG, and that will be a big factor in probably the timing and the proceeding that follows from there. Right now, this is really, it's a staff initiative to gather information, gather people's reaction. The power advisory report was commissioned by staff, not by the board, as a opportunity to take the question on IRM to the next step. And the next step after that is probably some consideration by the board, but I can't speak as to what that outcome would be.
Rusty, you said you'll be awaiting application from OPG. I didn't understand that. Is the board going to establish some form of filing requirement? Is that the intention of this, is to take this process along to the point where there is a filing requirement that involves some form of multi-year plan?
I can't answer that in positive or negative, Jay. I don't know. I don't think we have full information, and I don't know the thinking of the board right now.
And what was your point about awaiting an application from OPG?
Well, we've heard several different plans, and we've heard the latest iteration today, which is somewhat different and nuanced, but with a lot more detail than what we've heard before. I think that because this is truly a will have long-term implications and will be precedent setting, I think the board would like to proceed cautiously at this time. So I wouldn't commit the board to anything.
Am I jumping the gun and making the assumption that the board's not currently contemplating that the next rate setting will be on the basis of some new set of rules?
That's sort of a double negative question.
Punk has just suggested that they would be filing something for next year to start in 2014. It sounds like you're saying it's not likely the board will have a new set of rules to apply to that application. If that application comes in as cost of service, that's how it will be dealt with. Am I jumping the gun on that, or is that a reasonable conclusion?
Well, I think you're a bit jumping the gun. I wouldn't say one way or the other, but highly likely that we're going to be fairly cautious going forward.
Thanks.
Any more general discussion? Well, I do appreciate everyone coming to the session, and thanks for your insights and questions. It was a very good session. Operator, I think you can close it down now. Thank you.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time. We thank you for your participation.